Welcome to the Bodily Transgressions in Fantasca Media podcast series. We hope you enjoy the series. If you have any questions or comments, we invite you to attend the digital symposium, which will take place on 12th November 2022 via Zoom. The event will be free, or drop us a line on our Discord server. Details are on the podcast information or can be found at fantascajournal.com under CFB's events and news. That's Fantastica with a K. This podcast is part of Panel 8, Cannibalizing Femininity, which will take place at 6:50 p.m. GMT time. This podcast is presented by Sonakshi Srivastava. Sonakshi is a writing tutor at Asoka University and an MPhil scholar at Indraprastha University. Her research is at the intersection of food futures, speculative fictions, and the Anthropocene. She is a South Asia Speaks Translation Fellow from the class of 2021 and was also shortlisted for the Food Serendipity Lab. Her presentation today is entitled Arboreal Embodiment, Subjectivity, Silence, and Vegetal Future in Hong Kong.
Before embarking on an insightful investigation of how she became a tree, Sumana Roy quotes from Cheslaw Milhaud's, "Not that I want to be a god or a hero, just change into a tree, grow for ages, not hurt anyone," to highlight that a desire to become a tree is not unique to her. Like the epigraph, Roy distinctly signposts two reasons that had invoked arboreal fantasies within her. At first, it was the underwear. Throttled by the oppressive societal requirement to wear a bra, Roy realizes that trees are free from the violent sartorial necessity. The other reason that prompts her to embrace the idea of an arboreal transformation is to escape from being bulldozed by time. Roy is pushed to embrace the arboreal world specifically because it lacks the specter of violence that haunts her in the human world. Human beings are not preoccupied with the existence of trees, particularly because they are not in direct conflict with them. This lack of conflict epitomizes the tree's position as non-violent beings. In the epigraph 2, Milhaud distinctly mentions this quality of the trees. They do not hurt anyone. Thus, Roy is induced to an arboreal imagining because she is enchanted by the serenity of forests and the distance from prosaic human existence. The Milhaudian sentiment and Roy's expressed reasons that initiated her arboreal transformation find ready grounds to germinate in Yongai, the protagonist of The Vegetarian. Before I foray into a close reading of the aforementioned text to delineate the reason that causes the protagonist to undergo arboreal metamorphosis, I will briefly introduce the text. Winner of the 2016 edition of the Man Booker International Prize, Han Kang's The Vegetarian is the story of Yongai who believes that she is becoming a tree. Prior to this belief, she pronounces her remarkableness by giving up meat. The two instances are not isolated but intricately tied to the specter of violence that haunts Yongai's existence. As readers, we never get complete access to Yongai's interiority, for each of the three parts of the novel presents a viewpoint from either her husband, her brother-in-law, or her sister In Hai. Though only glimpses into her interiority are provided by her dreams and some reflections that intersperse the narrative. However, what is certain is that a transition to becoming a tree is not sudden, rather it had always existed in traces, with her nipples resembling a pair of acorns in the first part to her final metamorphosis into a glistening tree by the close of the novel. Much like Roy, Yongai too detests bras because she finds them oppressive. These traces of recognition of her oppression eventually culminate in her desire to be a tree. Yongai launches into an arboreal self-imagining after she recognizes her shared violation with non-human animals at the hands of a patriarchal order, a recognition that gains momentum after the significance of her dreams of violent acts perpetrated by night, dreams where she is only now coming face to face with a thing that has always been here begin to dawn upon her. Feminist and animal rights activist Carol J. Adams has extensively sought to deconstruct the politics of meat and the subjugated subjection and the associated subjugation of women. She enunciates the percolation of the myth of men as hunters by clubbing together edible non-human animals and women as victims of the patriarchal order. Her scholarship highlights the sexualization of non-human animals and the objectification of women as symptomatic of the malady of patriarchy, which is underpinned by the myth of the man-hunter. Eating meat becomes synonymous with the dominant ideology of men as hunters and non-human animals and women as hunted. It is by attempting to circumvent this ideology that Yongai perturbs the ordered existence of her family and those around her. Meat is central to Korean society, figuring in ancestral rituals as symbols of the sacrifices made by the elders of the family. To abstain from it implies a threat to societal structure, which is patriarchal at large. This threat to patriarchal structure is visible when Yongai refuses to comply with the orders of two patriarchal authorities, Mr. Cheong's boss at his dinner party and her father during her sister's housewarming ceremony. One of the ways through which Adams highlights the congruent violation and subjugation of women and non-human animals is by introducing the concept of absent referent. This concept refers to the act of making edible non-human animals absent from the entire act of consumption by employing demystifying gastronomic taxonomy. The absent referent permits us to forget about the animals as independent entity. It also enables us to resist efforts to make animals present. The undercutting of the original meaning of non-human animals as it gets absorbed in a dominant human-centered hierarchy also extends to women by way of sexual violence. Adams equates the processes by which non-human animals and women are made absent reference by way of butchering and rape, which qualifies as metaphorical butchering, respectively. Any act of violence requires instruments, knives and forks in the actual butchering of animals, penis in rape. A violent act, rape objectifies women, treating them as inert objects with no attention paid to their feelings or needs. Consequently, they feel like pieces of meat. Adams also offers the medium of lens, that is camera, as an instrument that perpetrates violence against women. Attributing the power of representation as the domain of the male gender, Adam condenses the idea of the subjectivity of women being relegated to the background as they are subject to objectification by the dominant male gaze. She writes, "Looking at representations provides the gazer with pleasure while simultaneously reinforcing the distance between subject and object as unbridgeable, thereby corroborating the idea of distancing in the concept of absent reference." Within the novel, Yongai is subjected twice to rape, one by her husband Mr. Cheong, who leaves her feeling like a comfort woman, and subsequently by her brother-in-law who, under the garb of his aesthetic project, attempts to force himself on her. As if the sexual violence is not enough, Yongai's body also endures violence at the hands of her father, recipient of the Order of Military Merit, at the housewarming lunch for her absolute stubbornness to refuse meat. Her dressing down is reminiscent of the demeaning association between women and non-human animals. The scene is nothing short of a simulated war scene with the images of associated violence, blood, brutality, and inhumanity. Yongai's becoming a tree is the product of the recognition actuated by her dreams and these acts of violence inflicted on her body that serve her to identify the similarities between non-human animals and herself. I will briefly attempt a close reading of the dreams to pronounce the blurring of distinctions between her own body and the bodies of the non-human animals. Before she dreams up her first dream, Yongai reckons how, while mincing meat, the knife had sliced cold into her finger, and a remnant of that knife was later found in Mr. Cheong's meal. Upon being rebuked from him, Yongai does not agitate. Rather, she dreams of an infinite space away from the dining table and the kitchen area. thereby anticipating her life as a tree in a vast expanse of forest away from closed spaces. In the uncanny dream that follows, she found herself chewing on something that felt so real but couldn't have been. In the dream, familiarity had precipitated into unfamiliarity, marking her initiation into vegetarianism. I interpret this unfamiliarity as a first expressed instance that serves to rouse Yongai to recognize a shared position with the non-human animals. The kitchen scene may be interpreted as an act of consumption of Yongai by her husband, in contrast to the dream, where Yongai is chewing on something real, hinting at no longer seeing meat as an absent referent, but as something real, something with a life of its own. This insight gains further grounding in her second dream, where the violent acts perpetrated by the night, the dreams of murder, perplexes the distinction between the murdered and the murderer. The juxtaposition of murder or murdered aids in contextualizing the kitchen incident and the first dream, upsetting the hierarchies of who is consuming who. The vivid violence of the dream sticks to her conscience. In another dream, the violence continues. However, she is offered some respite by her breasts, cataloging hands, feet, tongue, and gaze, which by extension corroborates Adam's discussion of the gaze, as weapons from which nothing is safe. Yongai places faith in her breasts, necessitating the emotions of maternal kindness and nurture. As opposed to the catalogue of bodily weapons, her breasts are benevolent. The final dream that bridges the gap between Yongai's subjugated existence and her arboreal existence is the dream where she witnesses the violent murder of the dog who had bitten her at the hands of her father. Her dreams come to a full circle as she realizes that the flickering eyes of the first dream are in fact the dog's. Symbolic of her father's prowess, the meat haunts her in her dreams, gradually allowing her to perceive the violence around her. Yongai's situation is akin to that of a trapped animal eating a dead animal. She attempts to break free from the cycle of violence that has seeped so deep in her life by believing that she is becoming a tree. Yongai's desire to transform into a tree is not typical of her. Roy, too, was unsurprised when she realized that a desire to be a tree was not peculiar to her but had, in fact, proliferated the world of literature since the time of Ovid and perhaps beyond. With a particular focus on Ovid and his tale of the metamorphosis of Daphne into a tree, Roy identifies the fear of sexual violence as the reason for Daphne's wish to transform into a tree. Yongai too, perceiving the threat to her bodily integrity, amplified further by her cognizance of the oppressed connection between women and non-human animals, desires to become a tree. Like her predecessor Daphne, Yongai wishes to escape from the violence inflicted on her as well as the body of non-human animals. She dreams of a vegetative world where trees are her brothers and sisters. Unlike Daphne, Yongai does not literally transform into a tree. Rather, it is a gradual process manifesting within, in her mental landscape, rather than without. The focus on body is quite telling as it serves as the site and site of control, linking us back to Adam's concept of the absent reference. Before finally believing that she is a tree, Yongai first gives up wearing a bra because of the way it squeezed her breasts. When Mr. Chong attempts to correct this aberration by lecturing her, her retort that he would not understand how constricting it felt highlights Yongai's decision to break free from the constrictions and prescriptions of a patriarchal society. At home, she gives up wearing tops and shirts, roaming around half naked. The transformation to a tree begins to take a firm rooting when Yongai exposes her naked self to the sun while at the hospital. Yongai is hospitalized because she wields a knife on her wrist to wrest herself from the patriarchal militarism of her father, who attempts to force feed her meat. This act of brandishing the knife may be contextualized in Adam's scholarship, where she appeals for the interruption of the traditional narrative, that is patriarchal at large, by asking women to fill up the gaps and silences. These gaps and silences may be filled by women claiming up their agency, just as Yongai does. The wielding of the knife may be interpreted as an act of self-preservation against the violent act of being force-fed, against the violent act of killing and consuming animals. Yongai's body continues to photosynthesize into a tree, spending majority of her time out on the veranda, sunning herself in the late autumn sunshine. She would occupy herself in picking up dried leaves that had fallen from the flower pots and crumbling them into a fine powder, or by stretching out the palm of her hand to cast shadows on the floor. Her body, somehow beyond comprehension, begins to associate itself with all things floral, and when her brother-in-law witnesses the long fetishized Mongolian mark on her body, he realizes that it evokes something pre-evolutionary, or else perhaps a mark of photosynthesis, realizing that the mark was more vegetal than sexual. Yongai is sapped of the slightest feelings of desire, passed into a border area between states of being where limits and boundaries no longer hold any meaning for her. Yongai frequently takes to exposing her body to the sunlight by taking her clothes off. The dreams that had besieged her stop coming after her brother-in-law paints flowers on her body. Although this painting is an act of lust on the part of her brother-in-law, Yongai believes it to be a material realization of her arboreal transformation. She consents to being filmed with flowers painted on her body in postures that border on the pornographic because of this belief. Her gentle tossing, her naked body littered with gorgeous blooms, the Mongolian mark against background of silence, a soundless harmony, reminds her brother-in-law of something primordial, something eternal, hinting at the timeless existence of the trees long before human life made its impression on earth. The nudge of something primeval, something eternal, eventuates when he dreams of Yongai's metamorphosis in a tree. The lucid description of her skin as pale green and her body covered with a pale wash of green readily bring to mind the picture of a tree. He is unable to see the area above her breasts because his eyes are dazzled by a source of light. I interpret the source of light as nothing but the sun, risen and shining atop the tree. As he tries to enter her, a green sap that is usually symptomatic of bruised leaves begins to ooze from her vagina, again hinting at the violence of rape. The vegetal description is complete when her brother-in-law remarks that Yongai smells of the sweetness of grass. Yongai also attributes a non-sexual meaning to wet. Devoid of any carnal desires, she remarks that she is wet after filming with painted bodies for her brother-in-law. While her brother-in-law takes it as a hint to get physical with her, Yongai roughly shoves him away, declaring that it was the flowers that had made her want it, unlike ever before. And with flowers painted on her body, she pushes her breasts over the veranda, spreading her legs as wide as she could, as though she wanted to make love to the sunlight, to the wind, while her body glistens with an intensity more marked than the night that her brother-in-law had filmed her. We are again reminded of the violence of the gaze that Adam postulates and Yongai's dream of violent acts perpetrated by night. Yongai's transitions from a painted floral pattern body that photosynthesizes in the sun to a glistening tree that only requires water to subsist, her image overlapping with the Zelkova tree. The repeated references to a glittering body and glowing breasts allude to the utopic vision of a feminist and a pacifist future, one that is reminiscent of a golden age where elements of vegetarianism and feminism intersect. By switching to vegetarianism, Yongai recognizes the dormant violence against non-human animals and by extension against her. By transforming into a tree, she recognizes a truly gynocentric way of being in harmony with the earth and in harmony with her body, which does not include killing non-human animals. This bonding displayed by Yongai is foreshadowed in an interview conducted by Adams, where the participant declared that she was beginning to bond with the earth as sister and with animals as subjects not to be objectified. The metamorphosis into a tree is an act of exercising agency by Yongai, much like Daphne. By retreating into sylvan worlds, they had sought to replace the violence of the blood culture with a plant culture, the latter reimagining a world without violence. Transforming into a tree assures freedom from the grasp of human cruelty. By transforming into vegetal beings and establishing a sense of kinship with non-human agents, both Yongai and Roy seek to transcend the violence of the human world. The envisaged non-violent sylvan world provokes us as readers to reflect on the possibility of a verdant utopia that offers a respite from the freight of doubt and weight of hope, a respite from the inanities of postmodern life.